Welcome back to the McAdoo Studios. Kyle Bailey, Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com. We got Christian Four on the ones and twos pushing all the buttons over there. Our buddy Danny Noakes is out for the second hour today. If you're a Virginia Tech soccer fan or a UVA soccer fan, you can hear Danny's call of Virginia Tech hosting number 21 UVA at Thompson Field coming up this evening at 7 o'clock. Danny will have the call over on ESPN3. You can watch that game live on the internet, of course, on your smartphone as well. We'll welcome Danny back to the show coming up on Monday afternoon, as he is now a permanent fixture here. Glad to have him with us. All right, Chris, I've taken a lot of questions from fans this week, Virginia Tech football fans, about Dwayne Lawson. And I'm sure you've taken the same questions, seen the same discussions about Lawson on your message boards over at TechSideline.com. You know, people wondering why, if Dwayne Lawson's red shirt was to be burned, that he's not getting more playing time, that he's not been seeing more action to prepare him for the future. And while I understand that, you know, fans want to see more of Lawson, they want to know why his red shirt was burned, I understand the angst over it a little bit, but the fact of the matter was that when Michael Brewer went down for 4 to 8 weeks and Motley assumed the starting position, well, Dwayne Lawson became the number two quarterback. And and Brendan Motley's taken a lot of shots. He's been injured before. Lawson's had to step in two or three times when Motley was injured or had his helmet knocked off. You can't just keep a number two guy on the sideline without any live game action and expect him, if his number is called, to step in and be effective. I know it was not ideal to burn his red shirt, but I don't think they had any other choice, because if Chris Durkin was that good an option, he wouldn't be a tight end right now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I go back to that NC State game when Motley got knocked out and Lawson came in for one play. I didn't think Motley was coming back in the game. I really didn't.
Oh.
I looked at the huddle on the next possession, and Lawson was in the huddle. Like, he was coming out on the field, and then Motley ran in there at the last second and said, no, I'm playing. I mean, at that point, if you're the coaches, I mean, at that point, you don't know whether – let's say at that point in time, Lawson had not played a down on the year yet.
Mm-hmm.
The NC State game, it's the third quarter of the NC State game, and you're up 21-13, and – Brendan Motley goes down, and you got to decide whether to put in third-team quarterback Chris Durkin, who's partially practicing as a tight end now, or as a scout team quarterback,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of both. Do you put him in, and what if Brendan Motley can't come back? I mean, what if it was a bad enough injury where he had missed multiple weeks? At that point, you don't know.
Right.
So you have to put in your number two option at that point. So Lawson wasn't redshirting this year either way. I think what partially threw off their plans, I think there's no point in bringing him in as a wildcat quarterback behind Brendan Motley when you can just run those same plays with Brendan Motley, right?
Agreed, yeah.
So, you know, I think there's a chance that he might have been a wildcat-type quarterback had Michael Brewer stayed in. I think they might have used Brendan Motley as their number two regular quarterback, but he would have had a very limited involvement in the Wildcat package, and the way they would have gotten Dwayne Lawson ready to increase his reps and not blow his red shirt, for lack of a better term, would to have him be the Wildcat quarterback this year.
Would you play him tomorrow? Because now you have a healthy Michael Brewer. Now, I'm asking this question just simply based on the fact that people want to see Lawson play, mm-hmm. but now you have a backup in Brendan Motley, who has not only proven he can run those kind of Wildcat plays, but that he can throw the football. So at this point, yeah, you've blown the red shirt, so you can play him whenever you want to, but you also have a more effective number two right now who can do many of the same things. So at this point, there's not much reason for them to play Dwayne Lawson unless they think he's improved that much to passer in the course of a couple of weeks that's his job now.
Right, and I don't see how that can happen when, you know, at this point, I bet he didn't get any reps this week. I mean, the third team doesn't get reps. You know, that was a big thing that people overlook. When you're the second team, you're getting a ton of reps in practice. So since he was second team, he was getting all those second team reps, so he was able to develop, learn the offense more, things like that. The little things that people can't see during the course of a game. He's more prepared right now than he was 6 weeks ago because of all those number two reps he's getting. But he's probably not getting very many reps at all right now as the number three quarterback. Just like Carson Lydon's not getting any reps as the number three Mike linebacker, because you don't have time to rep your third team during the course of the week. So, you know, it hasn't been the easiest situation to handle. I wish they had been able to redshirt him. In hindsight, I wish they had bit the bullet and redshirt him. But for all I know, they might have promised him he was going to play. You have to do that these days to get some players.
Sure. And if you renege on that promise, you know, there's ripple effects across the recruiting trail. Coaches lie to you. They promised I was going to play. They lied to me. They're not going to play me. And that reverberates and has effects on the recruiting trail.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You know this better than I do. I mean, that's just a simple fact.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't know what goes on behind the scenes in these recruitments and things like that. You know, I always thought he was going to play this year. But at the same time, how much of a role can a backup quarterback really have outside of coming in and running the Wildcat package? I mean, if Virginia Tech had decided to split time with him and Michael Brewer in a regular quarterback capacity this year, and Virginia Tech had lost a football game because of it, everybody would have been jumping off the deep end. How can you be playing Dwayne Lawson that much? But now the other end of it is, oh, you blew his red shirt.
Right.
You know?
You can't keep people happy.
You
honestly can't. And there are always rumors and, you know, he said, she said, somebody talked to Dwayne Lawson or his mom or his uncle or his handler, or, you know, that's a bad word to use. I'm not insinuating he has one of those. I'm just saying somebody talked to someone who says, well, Dwayne's disgruntled. Dwayne is not happy they burned his red shirt and he might be considering a transfer. I haven't talked to Dwayne Lawson. I don't think you've talked to Dwayne Lawson. He's not been made available to the media. None of that can be corroborated or substantiated by any stretch. Would you be upset if you were Dwayne Lawson that your shirt was burned and you're not really a factor in the offense right now?
I don't know. It depends on what I was told throughout the recruiting process, and it depends on how I felt like I was playing in practice. If I felt like I was playing at a high level, if I felt like I was outperforming Brendan Molly in practice and I wasn't playing, then I would be upset. I have no idea if he feels that way or not. I have no idea what he was told during the recruiting process. You know, people are talking about him transferring, and you know, the unfortunate part of him not redshirting this year is that actually makes it easier to transfer if he wanted to go that route,
mm-hmm.
because now he can use that sit-out year as a redshirt year. Whereas if he had redshirted this year and then he decided to transfer, you know, that way he would just end up losing a year of eligibility, and that's never a good thing. So I don't know what's going on through his head. Nothing would surprise me at this point, particularly if there are coaching changes, which, you know, there obviously could be.
Possibility.
I think it's foggy right now. It's like you're driving down the road and you really can't see 20 feet in front of you.
That's
you just
got
to slow down and take it as it comes.
And it's tough to look ahead right now given the uncertainty, all the moving parts, and like you said, potential changes. We don't know if there will be. There could be, though. And looking ahead to next year's quarterback situation, because Brewer won't be here. You thought at this time last year, you thought the future of the quarterback position was maybe not figured out because nothing's ever set in stone in college football, but you had Andrew Ford on campus. And you had Chris Durkin, who was still developing as a quarterback, and you know Motley still had a couple of years left, and the Jackson kid from Michigan who's going to be on it. It's Josh Jackson, I believe, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be on his way in here, and then the Lawson thing happened, but now Ford's opted to transfer. Durkin's going to be a tight end full-time, it would seem. Brewer's going to graduate and move on, and Brendan Motley is, as I understand it, on track to graduate in December, and though, you know, he'll return probably with, you know, his sights set on being the starting quarterback next year, like you said, depending on who the coach is, the offensive coordinator is, he may find it in his best interest to take that fifth year of eligibility and move on to another program. I'm not saying he will. I'm not saying I've heard anything. I'm just saying that that's a possibility. So that position, you know, is still kind of up in the air for next year. Ideally, you'd like to think that, you know, your prized recruit in Dwayne Lawson could be ready to go in year two, whether he's the starter or the backup, but you simply don't know.
Yeah, you don't know that at all. And right now, Virginia Tech's quarterback situation in the spring on paper looks like this. Brendan Motley, number one. Dwayne Lawson, number two. True freshman Joshua Jackson, number three. Well, if something happened to your number one or number two guy, then all of a sudden Joshua Jackson's your number two quarterback as a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Dwayne Lawson did decide to transfer or Motley decided to transfer or whatever, then boom, you've got Joshua Jackson in there, which at that point you move Chris Durkin back. You would have to, right?
Right. You think so?
Yeah.
You think so? But then again, if you still don't trust him to throw the football, what changes over the course of a couple of months, really?
It depends on what system you're running.
It does.
Really. Like, if Virginia Tech had a... Let's just say it was Rich Rod.
I knew you were going there.
I have no idea if it's going to be him or not whenever the time comes. I don't know.
No, but it's all the rage in the national media right now.
Sure. But, you know, his passing offense is much simpler than Scott Loeffler's pro-style passing
attack.
It would make it easier on a quarterback like Chris Durkin or any of those quarterbacks, to be completely honest with
sure.
you. So that would make that an easier move for him.
Could do it. Chris Coleman, TechSideline.com. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Coleman. TSL, we'll quickly chat about the defense, right? You and I have discussed this, using total defense and yards per play is kind of an antiquated way of gauging how good a defense is, right? You know, I think a prime example with Virginia Tech in particular. You and I have mentioned this as well, that last year they finished top 25 in total defense, but according to many more indexes and advanced metrics, they were among the top five defenses in the country because opposing offenses simply did not drive the length of the field on them. Mm-hmm. It almost very rarely happened. It was all big plays or short fielded or short fields that opposing offenses cashed in on. But last week against Miami, they're gifted a touchdown right off the bat from the 3-yard line. Another interception led to points. All in all, this defense, you got to, you know, tip your cap to Bud Foster. His group has not been great at times this season. Injuries have certainly factored in. Youth in the secondary's factored in. But I thought they came to play last Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I thought, obviously, that first touchdown should not be put on them.
No.
So I really thought, outside of that one drive before halftime, I was pretty happy with the way they played last week. I know everybody's used to great play around here, but when, like I said, they're facing an NFL quarterback. Brad Kaya passed for 405 yards against Florida State in Tallahassee the previous week.
Mm-hmm.
Last I checked, they got some pretty good athletes running around in Tallahassee.
Dang on right.
Yeah, so that guy's top-notch quarterback. His receivers are all between 6'2", 6'4", and can jump through the roof. And, you know, they're going up against freshman defensive backs back there. You know, there were some matchup advantages in Miami's favor in that game. But I think if you take out Luther Maddie jumping off sides and giving them a free play, I've overall been pretty pleased with the way the Tech defense played.
I think you have to be. They came to play last week, that, like you said, facing what I believe is a future first-round NFL quarterback. I'm not sure that there is a great class that's expected to come out next year. I haven't looked at it top to bottom. I don't know. But I do know there's a lot of concern about, you know, whether or not there are enough, or the crop of pro-style quarterbacks at the college level is dwindling. A lot of concern about that. David Cutcliffe, Duke's head coach, talked to us about that yesterday. His take was that, you know, there are quarterbacks out there, but that the NFL guys have to do a better job scouting them, and it's simply on them, and all this is just, you know, much ado about nothing. But I think you see a pro-style guy, big, strong arm, stands in the pocket, that will be much coveted by NFL franchises when his time comes next year.
That's a great point that you bring up about fewer pocket quarterbacks, traditional NFL quarterbacks, and he's definitely one of those guys, which could increase his stock quite a bit. So
I think
that's
it will.
A really good point.
And that the throw, and I go back to the throw he made at the end of the first half, that touchdown pass, pretty good coverage.
Sure,
and he put that ball
in
the only place it could go for that touchdown pass, and he was good. I like what I see from Brad Kaya, a really talented kid. Seems like a good kid as well, and he's, you know, I know it's tough for Tech fans to hear this or even consider this, but, you know, he's easy to root for, I think, you know, everything you hear.
Yeah, I mean, even though he plays for Miami, I think he has a good head on his shoulders, and I think he's going to be an NFL quarterback sooner rather than later. He looks like one of those guys who can leave after his junior year to me.
Yeah, and he played as a true freshman last year. Can't leave for this coming draft, but he will be able to next year, and I fully expect that he will, barring a terrible regular season. But more to get to. Final segment with Chris Coleman of Tech Sideline coming up next. We'll talk about this Duke Blue Devils team, what to expect tomorrow, and if for a second year in a row, still sounds odd to me to say it just as long as I've been around here, but if unranked Virginia Tech can knock off a ranked Duke team in Blacksburg and Lane Stadium. Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.